Hey everyone, this is Ben. This isn't one of our standard recorded intros or scripted intros. Just wanted to talk to you for a couple of minutes. Wanted to apologize for the fact that Turbo has taken so long to come out. Long story short, right when we were supposed to start recording Turbo, I got very, very sick. I'm not going to go into too many details, but I got very, very ill. And one of the things that I had to be on was vocal rest, which means I wasn't able to record podcasts or do anything like that. And for a while, the other three members of Voices from the Grid, Brian, Sasha, and Mike, tried to wait out my illness. They wanted to have us all be here for the season, but it became apparent fairly quickly that that was not an option, and my sickness was not clearing up as quickly as it should. So we did a bit of rejiggering to the season, and now you'll hear me in like four total episodes. It should be the opening episode, the finale. You'll hear me in the episode where the Rangers switch over. And you'll hear me in one other episode, which will feature my personal favorite episode, Troubled by the Slice. Yes, that episode. But look, that's basically what I wanted to talk about. We got this episode done as quickly as we could. They flat out refused to record those four episodes without me, especially the pizza episode, because I've been so hyped to record it. So yes, the delay is completely on me, and I wanted to apologize for that. That being said, in order for us to get Turbo out in an expedient manner, now that is fully recorded, you won't have any scripted intros this season. This will be the only cold open you should be hearing. Every other episode should just start out with the theme music, and then go straight into the episode. Yeah, I'm really sorry for the delay, and I hope you can all forgive me. That being said, please enjoy episode one, Power Rangers Turbo, as reviewed by Voices from the Grid.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid. We are bridging the gap between Zeo and Turbo with Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. I am the Blue Ranger, Michael, being joined by the rest of the team, the Pink Ranger, Brian Massey.
Hey, everybody, what's happening?
The Green Ranger, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What up? It's me, your boy.
And the Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan.
The one, the only, the ever suffering on these group recordings. And yep, the ever snarky. Can't forget the snark.
Yep. And as I mentioned, we are bridging the gap. This is a Turbo. This is technically speaking the beginning of the Turbo season, but also technically not at the same time. It's not like the other movie. So I'm just gonna Yep, go ahead, Brian.
I was just gonna add on to that. It's like the other movie seems to exist in this weird ether that, you know, isn't connected to anything, and yet somehow is connected to the series that came before it, but whatever. It's weird.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. None of this matters.
But with Turbo Power Rangers movie, it is actually canon. It actually takes place a year after the events of Zeo and leads us into how we obviously get the turbo powers, hence this name.
Wait, I'm sorry. This takes place a year after the end of Zeo?
Yes.
You want to explain this timeline to me, please?
So apparently after the events of Zeo, when they defeated Mondo and the Machine Empire...
point of order, they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Rita and Zed did that.
I know, but the thing is that according to how they put out the plot, this is...
Okay. This is the plot synopsis. Okay.
Yeah, so plot synopsis is 1 year after the Zeo Rangers defeated King Mondo and the Machine Empire, which took place at the end of Zeo, you know, and then they go into the On the Distant Planet Lyria,
no
with your name, Larigo.
Hold on.
So what were Rita and Zed doing for a year?
Chilling.
Apparently sleeping. But that's not where I have an issue here. So how old are they? Because like we know they'll graduate high school this season, but does that mean the events of like the first three seasons of Power Rangers really happen in like a year and a half?
Sure.
Oh my god. Yeah. That's weird. And also that means that there's a whole year that's unaccounted for in Power Rangers lore, where the Zeo Rangers were still kind of kicking it and doing their own thing.
Well, I guess we could argue the and there was the timeline shifting stuff, but then there were two Christmas specials, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean that, okay, you know what? If that means that Zordon recruited some high school freshmen that are 14 years old, putting, you know, the what happens to the, you know, the new Blue Ranger stuff seems significantly less weird now.
This
is what we're operating under.
And technically there are three Christmas specials, but one was straight to VHS and we never touched that one.
Okay, so thanks to for confirming that Zordon doesn't even recruit teenagers. Yeah. He recruits middle schoolers.
Well, we know that because Justin's 12.
Well, yeah.
But yeah.
All right, then. Thanks for that.
So that really leads to the first question of how does it actually feel to have a Power Rangers movie being, albeit the second one that was done, actually be canon, because it does take place after the events of Zeo, and it does lead into Turbo, especially the fact that, you know, just a little jump ahead, the first episode of Turbo, the actual season, is Justin recapping the entire events of this movie to Rocky.
Of all the Power Rangers movies, Turbo, a Power Ranger movie, is absolutely one of them.
Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I was just going to add, like, and I figure knowing you, Ben, that means that it's definitely one out of two.
As much as I have this joke that the 2017 movie didn't happen, I would go so far as to say of the three Power Rangers movies that exist, literally zero of them are important to watch.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Especially since shift into Turbo starts with a recap of the Turbo movie. Did you know the Turbo movie? You know when Hasbro did this whole thing of pulling all the old seasons off of Netflix and then later partnering with Netflix to air Dino Fury? Anyway. And putting all of the Turbo stuff, all of the older stuff on the YouTube channel. The Turbo movie is not there.
Turbo and the first Power Rangers movies are on select Disney Plus apps in specific regions because Disney technically owns the first two Power Ranger movies.
And the Turbo movie was briefly on Hulu at the time of this recording, and but it wasn't when I went to watch it yesterday.
And it's currently on Tubi.
My point being, if you were to go to what Hasbro has day and been like, this is where all the Power Rangers stuff is, you can't watch the Turbo movie. But which is pursuant to my point is you don't need to watch the Turbo movie.
It's extra credit if you really want to watch it, but like after listening to us talk about it, you're probably not going to want to watch it. I don't know.
To be honest, I think the real extra credit would be to watch the very first Power Rangers Christmas special where Alpha literally kidnaps children.
Yeah.
That is not canon, and you cannot convince me otherwise. Okay, so Mr. Hostman, let's do this.
All right, so we begin in Angel Grove. You got Tommy, Adam, and Rocky training for an upcoming martial arts charity tournament, and Rocky's lacking focus. And this is essentially them writing him out of the movie.
So
for the most part,
I don't think saying he's lacking focus is the right way of putting it. There's a line from the trainer guy who specifically says you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not that he's lacking focus. It's more that he's pushing himself too hard.
Yeah. And him pushing himself too hard causes him to do a jumping kick out of the ring.
Yeah. So
and onto his back.
I'm not a wrestling person. I've never seen a wrestling match. I've only seen the only wrestling or anything ring-like I've only seen in movies.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna, from my perspective as a non-person of this genre, the way that he flies out makes absolutely no sense.
And so
it makes
in
no sense.
In order to get that sort of flying out of the ring from, say, a wrestler, they would have to be deliberately trying to do so or having someone throw them.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Thank you.
And this one was neither because...
Yeah. It's like he does a flying kick and then the next thing we see is him flying over the thing. And I'm like, wait, how does that work? It doesn't.
And not like that, but the other thing is that like he's in the middle of the ring when he does the kick. So how the hell does he get... And let's just say it's the standard 20 by 20 wrestling ring. How does he get 10 feet over to the ropes to go over the ropes from the middle of the ring?
There's a very simple explanation.
If I can add on to that as well, and here's what makes it even weirder, is it's not even a wrestling ring, it's a boxing ring.
Mm-hmm. And so there's four ropes and they're higher.
Yeah, so if anything, there's no reason why he should be falling out of that because there's... Like they want to secure people in those rings, and like so, it's even weirder that he fell out of it like that. So that's just
part of me is like the wrestling fan part of me is like that could be dope if someone did it in a match.
Yeah,
and the other half of me is like this is kind of stupid, but then there's this bit in the middle that goes. There has been a shorthand for four seasons of Power Rangers at this point where they can jump super high and do all kinds of weird flippy shit that you can't elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Because they're Power Rangers.
This could be the first sign of like civilian powers, maybe.
No. The first sign, I think I covered this. The first sign of civilian powers is, I think it's partly the what we talked about. Like, in order for that to make sense in my brain, it's the whole Rocky's pushing himself too hard thing. So he lets a bit of his ranger power out and just does like a weird flippy
thing.
So
he accesses the power, but the power does not protect him. That's a shame.
The power is telling him it's time to go.
I mean, of all the ways to get written out of the show, there are worse.
Yeah, okay, we'll give you that
flails,
one.
Flails in Aisha. Yeah.
His back had to go to a peace conference. I don't know.
Or they could have just put him in a round room and told him to find the corner. Like...
All right, then. So, yeah, no, that was...
Yeah. Long story short, they were writing Rocky out because, I'm fairly sure that Steve Cardenas was just kind of, was he coming to the end of his contract or was it a dispute kind of thing?
I would not know exactly on that.
But either way, they'd come up with this idea to involve Justin somehow. And I would be very interested to know if the decision to involve Justin came after they knew they were writing Rocky out or before.
That's a great question.
So, according to Wikipedia, it says that Cardenas left the Power Rangers series and retired from acting during Power Rangers Turbo due to a contract disagreement and possibly to focus on his martial arts career.
Gotcha.
So, we know that the source of the whole Justin thing was Beetleborgs, right?
I mean,
that sounds right to me.
So,
yeah.
from everything I've read, decision to put a child Justin's age in was because Big Bad Beetleborgs was doing so good in the ratings. And they wanted to kind of cash in on that a little bit. And I, as I said, I would be very interested to know which came first, the contract dispute or the decision to put Justin in the show, which might have led to the contract dispute.
Maybe.
Anyway, sorry, I brought us back to a question we were trying to move on from.
So, with that, obviously with the way they kind of wrote Rocky out, also brings us the introduction of Justin. Mm-hmm. We first see Justin on a school bus with Tanya and I'm blanking on names already. Tanya and Catherine. They're doing like a field trip to said martial arts tournament.
Or, as she should probably be known in this movie, Tanya and not Kimberly.
Yes. Pretty much. We'll get there. We'll get there. But Kat and Tanya are chaperoning the school field trip to the martial arts tournament. Justin is one of the kids, and he's like the one kid who's being like anti-social, doesn't want to sing the song and all this other stuff. And just kind of wants to get there.
I'm not sure he's being antisocial. He's just sad.
Yeah, because
as we see in the conversation they have with him on the boat later, Justin's a kid with some problems.
Yeah, his father's always away working. His mother had recently passed away.
And his dad closed the martial arts studio down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Justin's also kind of stuck in an orphanage type situation.
Yeah, they refer to it as
a shelter.
The shelter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a weird choice because they never quite explained what kind of a shelter it was or what it actually did, considering Justin Hatlett has like Justin's not like a homeless child. He has a dad. So was this more like supposed to be like an after school community center thingy for kids?
According to this, it's called the Little Angels Haven Orphanage. That's official.
Which
name.
Makes no sense because Justin has a dad.
But yeah, that's due to his father never always being around and no one else to take care of him.
So then it's not an orphanage, it's a group home because he's a ward of the state. Power Rangers, stop doing this.
Yeah. I was quite vocal about my feelings on Justin's family situation when I wrote my review of Turbo. And
and I'm sure it will come up again. But
yeah, so
Justin's family situation is just the in a season where Bulk and Skull get turned invisible, then into monkeys, where we have a police lieutenant who retires to run a juice bar, and a villain who only ever loses because she doesn't know how to set her timers on her bombs to be shorter. Justin's family situation might be the thing that annoys me the most.
Oh, we'll get there.
Fair. So obviously, you know, as a result of this trip to come to the martial arts tournament, they actually show up after Rocky is hurt and is being carted off to the ambulance, to which Justin gets really upset. Justin actually goes into Rocky's hospital room, and when the others show up, he sneaks under Rocky's bed without them knowing about it, and he finds out who the Rangers are. How do you feel about the way Justin discovered who the Rangers were?
So,
go ahead.
So, what I wrote here just overall about Justin was, like, my thing was, is Justin allowed to do freaking anything? Because, like, he gets there and he sees Rocky, who he obviously knows, apparently, and he's told to stay back, which, sure, you know, there's a situation where Rocky needs to be treated for. But then, like, later on, he goes to see Rocky in the room, and then, like, he has to hide from people coming in, and it's like, is he just, like, not allowed to do anything? Like, is he just, like, supposed to stay away from, like, I don't know, it's weird, because, like, if you're a kid and you go in to see somebody that's your friend, and, like, the door opens, why is it your natural instinct to hide from that? Like, it just, I don't know.
Unless you snuck away to go see him, that would be the only explanation that I can come up with.
Yeah.
Can I ask, is it ever established what Justin and Rocky's friendship is? Because when the trip shows up to the martial arts place, right, and Justin sees Rocky, he's the only one of the kids that runs forward, and he yells Rocky's name, like, he's very good friends with Rocky, right?
Yeah.
And then he sneaks away to go see him in the hospital, which indicates the two of them had a very close friendship, even though we've never heard of Justin before. Right?
Well, and a lot happens in a year, I guess.
I don't think anywhere is it explained, even in Shift into Turbo, I don't think it's explained what their relationship is.
I just figured it had something to do with the martial arts, because that was how, because they say that, his, you know, Justin's dad had a martial arts studio. Mm-hmm. It's either that or through the orphanage, which is not an orphanage. I don't get it.
I would probably bank more on the martial arts studio side, because Rocky could have easily been one of the employees for, said studio.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just thought it was interesting that what's actually quite a pivotal, and I say interesting, is part of the course for early Power Rangers, that something that seems to be such a pivotal point is never established.
Yeah, at least we know we know how everybody met, like, Adam, Aisha, and Rocky. We know how Tanya was introduced and where she met Aisha. And Kat got a whole arc that introduced her.
And now, suddenly Justin.
Look,
here is small child.
All of the budget for this movie clearly went into the Larigo puppetry, so
yeah.
Which is terrible, but we'll get there.
It's so bad.
The thing that looks like a troll doll? Troll doll banged Alf.
I have a note in here about that.
I think that he looks like the Ewok version of Harry from Harry and the Hendersons if he was a gay magician. I don't know. That's just me.
Never saw that, but I'll take your word for it.
Don't get me wrong. The suit, for a TV budget, the suit is fairly impressive, right? They turned every cute lever up to 11 for it to be such a juxtaposition against Divatox and like the grime of everything, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get there.
I kept having this problem where I would pause when Larigo was on the screen, and every time I paused, he just looked like he was stoned out of his mind.
This whole movie, Larigo is just baked.
I will give it credit, though.
I'm tripping balls. I'm like, okay.
I will give it credit. Given the limitations of it and how weird it looked, it was semi-expressive.
Mm.
We could tell when Larigo was hurt. We could tell when Larigo was scared. So that at the very least, I appreciate it. But we've deviated from your initial question, but I think we've answered your question about Justin's weird introduction.
Which is fine because it works on Larigo, because thanks to Larigo, that's how we get introduced to the new baddies of the upcoming season in Divatox and her subordinates of Rygog and Elgar.
I have a question about Elgar.
I do too.
So I don't think I ever actually saw this movie. I only watched Turbo episodes and then I watched In Space.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way Divatox approaches Elgar and the way Astronomo approaches Elgar are two different things, but I digress. Mm-hmm. Is Elgar an alien or a robot?
Yes.
I think
more concrete explanation than that, please.
So Elgar is sometimes referred to as Divatox's actual brother?
Nephew. They use the word nephew.
Nephew, that's what it is. And then, that's right, because I think Rita, I believe, is like Divatox's potential like aunt or something like that or whatever. She's not. There's like a weird family dynamic between Divatox, Rita, and then eventually when we get into the actual season of Turbo, Demetra. There's a very weird dynamic between the three of them.
That's not explained
at times.
So
the Divatox and Demetria thing aside, I don't know where you're getting this from, Rita.
So in the movie, she calls Rita for help on how taking care of the Power Rangers because.
But we've established that the bad guys know each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing
through the United Alliance of Evil.
Yeah. But the way Rita and Divatox actually talk to each other, it's more of an it's a different kind of banter of how friends would actually talk or colleagues would talk. It was more in a, you know, familia type way.
Again, it's not like...
To go back to Sasha's actual question, Elgar is very much flesh. However, much like certain sci-fi franchises, he's definitely got like a robotic arm or something.
Yeah, because his arm gets ripped off, and I was like, wait, those are wires. What the heck?
Yeah, it's like he's got like a bionic hand or something.
Yeah, but so Elgar's kind of like both at this point. And then they have the subcraft submarine thing that they use as their lair.
Like the submarine.
I kind of do too. What are your overall thoughts on Divatox, you know, as a first impression going into the upcoming season?
The problem is I don't have a first impression of Divatox because again, I've already watched like Turbo and In Space like so many times.
If you were, but, if you did the Men in Black erase memory thing, well, this is the first time seeing her.
I think she's a little bit she's a little bit like ridiculous, but I enjoyed the heck out of her. She's just like, the actress is having so much fun playing this character, and she's putting her all into it, and she's like, I'm gonna be playing this villain and I'm gonna have a good time doing it. And based on her tactics and her approach to her minions, like, I think it was, she's the one that rips Elgar's arm off, and she's the one that chastises him for not getting Larigo. And although she's not immediately as intimidating as Lord Zedd was when he first approached, or the Machine Empire, you know that this isn't a woman that, no matter how ridiculous she is, you want to mess with.
Yeah. Like, I like her too. I know that she's played by Hillary Shepherd here, and I forget who it is that plays her for some time in Turbo. I know that there was reasons behind the scenes for that.
I think the actress was pregnant or went on maternity leave or something, so they brought in someone for the first few episodes, and then she came back.
Yeah, but like, Hillary Shepherd's version of Divatox is probably my favorite. Like, I think she's just the right amount of camp and like 60s sci-fi villainous for me. And her plan, like, her plan's at least somewhat competent, but it has a major flaw, because it's like, what if Malagor doesn't want to marry you? Like, you know, what are you going to do then? Because, like, you're doing all this stuff, and then, like, you know, you got these two, like, sacrifices to sweeten the deal and all this stuff, but, like, I don't know. It's just weird. So- and, like, her goal is to, like, get this key from Larigo and, like, merge with him, so, like merge with
Malagor,
so that, you know, they can pillage multiple dimensions like the pirate that she is. Which, by the way, if that's the case, I would love to see her wind up in, like, Corinth or Amber Beach. But, like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like there's such a massive flaw there, because it's like, what if he don't like you? Like, what are you going to do then? You know, so...
So it was funny, because at first I didn't catch on to the fact that she didn't know him. So I'm just like, oh, she's doing all of this to impress her fiance. And then we find out about like the island and everything. I'm like, wait, this guy's been trapped on an island. And I was like, oh, that's right, Malagor. It was kind of, it's funny, but it's still like pretty like.
If you look at the way Divatox acts throughout the Turbo movie, does she act like someone who at any point would have the thought pass through her head that someone isn't attracted to her?
No. Especially because when we first see her, they like sort of pan down to show us her outfit, and it like...
Which is
like...
exactly where I'm going with this. My first reaction, since that's what Mike's talking about, I've made no bones about the fact that Divatox is my favorite villain in the Zordon era, mainly for the reasons that Sasha outlined, because she's just fun. And whoever is playing her is having an absolute blast. But the two initial reactions I have when watching the Turbo movie is, one, they do their utmost best to make her different from the first two villains, the Machine Empire and Zedd and Reader. She's this very... Everything about her is different. But again, the implication is that the actress is having a blast, right? But the second thing is that outfit. She is the start of every Power Rangers season having a somewhat hot woman as a villain. Right?
Yeah.
After her, there is one in literally every season.
And not only that, but I think, I forget who did
and
it.
And 90% of them turned good and at some point.
I forget who did it, but it was either Linkara or Nostalgia Critic did something on Turbo Movie. And they were like, Yeah, we're talking about the budget here, and it's like, did you see Diva Tox's outfit? And like that was kind of like the joke because they put more emphasis on putting a spotlight on Diva Tox. And as you said, I didn't even realize the thing that you just brought up, Ben, about the, you know, hot woman villainous. I didn't even realize that until you just said that now, because I never thought of that.
Because you get astronomer in space, you get Trakina in Lost Galaxy, you get Valkyra in Lightspeed Rescue, etc.
Nadira in Time Force,
etc.
Yeah, didn't even realize that.
There's one in after Diva Tox. There's one in every season.
Look at Diva Tox being such a trendsetter.
I also like that something that is also very initially clear about Diva Tox is her motivations are very different to Rita and Zed and to the Machine Empire. She doesn't want to rule the Earth. She just wants to plunder it for resources. See what I'm saying? It's very... I love that she's such a different villain.
So she's many a pirate.
Yeah. And I love it.
Yeah, it's good that you change up how the villain works, especially for motives from time to time. You can't have them always want to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. I love Diva Tox. Give me more Diva Tox. Give me a whole pirate themed Power Rangers season where Diva Tox is the mentor. Let's go.
We could have had a pirate themed Power Rangers season, but no.
No, we have that super mega force.
Guys, it's still a painful wound. Let's not open it while we're suffering already through the Turbo movie.
All right, let's carry on.
And thanks to Diva Tox, she would bring us to the real heroes of the Power Rangers Zordon era, Bulk and Skull. And
why are they in this movie?
Because this isn't a movie. This is a feature-length episode.
I did the math, and this is like close to like 5 episodes, and like they don't really morph until like the last episode, and it's like
except for that one time.
We'll get to that one time. But
there's this moment with Bulk and Skull. There's this moment with Bulk and Skull where they're at a baseball game, and there's this one little throwaway line where they're interacting with. Now, once again, Lieutenant Stone, where he just says, man, we were lucky to get rehired. And I'm like, that would have been an infinitely more interesting story than the one we're actually being told.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because, okay, weren't you like...
Here's the thing. You could legitimately, as much as we love our heroes, you could cut them out of this movie and it wouldn't change anything.
No, it would not.
But I kind of love their banter with Jason and Kimberly.
When they're actually like trying to be Scandinavian? Question mark?
No, I think Skull was supposed to be like Spanish or something, and Bulk is German.
Okay. And like, because I couldn't keep track of it either. I think in my notes I said like
they sounded like those two people from Saturday Night Live.
What the wild and crazy guys?
Yeah,
guys?
Yeah. Because Diva Tox, you know, she has Elgar capture two humans of purity and strength, and Elgar brings her Bulk and Skull.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Yeah, I mean. And of course, like, she's disgusted at, you know, his choice as a Bulk and Skull, so she throws him in the hold. And
should Elgar be regretting that at the end of In Space.
And Elgar obviously, you know, does like some type of like magic type thing onto them, which is why they're acting the way they are.
Yeah.
And then
so
they end up getting Jason and Kimberly, who are actually scuba diving.
Right, can we talk about this for a minute?
Yes, please.
The fact that Jason and Kimberly are within spitting distance of Angel Grove, and they've done nothing to let.
Well, they mentioned
the Rangers
that it was
know they're there.
Yeah, they mentioned it that it was supposed to be a surprise for the Rangers, that they were like going to go scuba diving and like come back and surprise everybody.
Yeah, so there was like a planned, like, it. So they kind of made a note. It was a planned scuba diving trip for Jason and Kimberly and then go visit the Rangers as a surprise.
Here's my question.
It actually is in the dialogue of the film.
Because, and I feel like this is something that's a little easier to ask because now we have this weird year gap thing, because it wouldn't have made sense if this was like immediately after. But again, a lot can happen in a year. Were Jason and Kim on a date or something?
See, that's how it always read to me.
That's how it looked to me too.
Is that the guy from Florida? Like, well, it can't be. That can't be it.
Because... Well, no, because the last time we saw Jason, he was riding off into the sunset at the end of Zio with his new crush on the back of his motorcycle.
Lasted?
Huh?
Well, that lasted.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I mean, we don't really know what Jason went up to in the in-between, and we know that Kimberly was in Florida, training for the Olympics or something. So he could have done a road trip or whatever, because clearly he already has his high school diploma or GED or whatever. So who needs school? So it's not outside the realm of possibility, considering it has been a year. I've blocked the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It was so far away. I know they were all friends, but I don't really remember a lot of specific interactions between Kim and Jason.
I mean, yeah. There weren't, but I remember from, not necessarily from the first time I watched it, but from when we were rewatching it for the show, I always found that Kim and Jason's friendship felt a lot more genuine than any interaction Kim and Tommy ever had.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, ever.
Yeah.
Even the scene where they're making out.
That's such an awkward kiss.
Which is why we didn't have another one on screen for 25 years.
Yep.
So,
well, that's also partially because Saban was like, no cooties.
But Brian, just let the joke run.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, it definitely felt a bit like Kim and Jason were on a date.
Yes!
Because if it was just like ex-Rangers getting together and hanging out, where's Zach?
Where's Trini?
Where's Trini, yeah.
Billy's still on
Aquitar.
Yeah.
And Aisha's probably still in Africa somewhere.
She's also like 27, 28, 29 at this point.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so moving on just a bit. So as all this is going on, Tommy and Kat go to get Largo, who transported himself into Africa and is potentially going to die of heat stroke. So as they go out there, they run into a few things like a giant python snake, and Kat is about to fall into water, and so to help protect her, she morphs into the Zio powers, which
for 2 whole seconds
goes away when she hits water. Which then kind of leads us into the introduction of the turbo powers. So
back up. We aren't gonna just gloss over that so quickly, are we?
No.
I mean, Largo kind of gave himself to...
No. I'm talking about the whole cat falling in the water thing.
Well, I mean...
Because I have stuff to say.
Go say it. Just go.
And I'm not even talking about the Zio power stuff. I will leave that for Brian and Sasha, because it sounds like they've got stuff to say as well. What do we know about Kat? And Kat's history?
She was a cat.
She was a diver.
Yep.
She did high dives. This is a woman who is literally in her element, and rather than relying on her own skill set, decides to try and morph and go into water feet first with flat feet. And is then like, oh, I broke my leg. She's a diver!
Yeah, sure. Look, Ben, the fact that, like, I completely forgot she was into swimming. And clearly the writers of this movie forgot everything if they knew it in the first place. So.
And then Tommy doesn't just dive in the water. He does this weird, stupid martial arts flip thing.
Which is like, he does this entire movie. I have notes on that.
This weird swan dive head first into the same kind of water that broke her leg. I'm like, that should be a concussion if the water's too shallow, but okay, whatever. I don't know.
There's a very simple explanation.
Yeah.
She's a diver.
Is she? When's the last time we saw her do
anything
water-related?
It's not about her having to... No, it's. I'm not even talking about the fact that she should be doing, like, a triple sow cow into the water.
No, I know you're not.
She should just have the brain capacity to not go in with flat feet. Point your feet and your legs will be fine.
Again, you're asking way too much from the writers of this movie.
I hate it so much.
I agree with you, Ben. It is dumb. It's so dumb.
Here's what I don't get, though. And this is also on par with this. Tommy, like, granted, Tommy doesn't need to morph to save Kat. But she morphs into the Zio powers.
Yep.
The morph sequence is completed. Do the Zio powers get shortened out in water now?
They're soluble, yeah. Zio powers are soluble.
Wait, I think Brian and I are going on the same joke. That all the Machine Empire had to do to destroy the Rangers was just flood Angel Grove.
Just make it rain.
Yeah.
And instead they can
rain.
And instead
that's why they're in California. That's why they're in California, because it doesn't rain in California.
But instead, the Machine Empire tried to take away all the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wait. Yeah, they did. Which also, that was a plot point in like the final episode of Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers 2, but that was
It just
makes no sense. These powers are like supposed to grow exponentially. They are supposed to like grow with the Rangers, and they're supposed to be stronger time and like over and over. Like they're supposed to just constantly. And so they're susceptible to water. It just, that makes no sense.
I have an explanation. I don't know where it just came from. It makes no sense, but neither does anything else in this movie. So I'm just going to roll with it. So we know that the turbo powers get introduced in this movie. We know that it seems like the Rangers or whoever has been working on these powers for a while. It doesn't make complete sense. But then what if the reason Kat couldn't morph completely and stick it is because the powers were being transferred into the turbo suits and the turbo zords and all that jazz? It's the only thing I can think of as to why the morph wouldn't stick, other than, you know, Ranger suits aren't waterproof.
I think that because we learned at the beginning that a year has passed, that the lack of activity within the Zero powers could have made them, you know, kind of like dissolve over, or I don't think
degrade over time. Except yeah. That was never established that was a thing.
I know
what was established is that they would get exponentially more powerful over time.
It didn't say that that time was dependent on how much they fight or don't fight.
Yeah. So that would be just one thing, but your logic makes just as much sense of that they're just being diverted into the turbo powers.
Right, but that doesn't make any sense because none of the Rangers know about the turbo powers. Also, the fact it doesn't make any sense.
Hey, I never said it made sense.
I'm about to say the following three words because Sash is going to shoot me. Super Mega Force.
No!
We have the Zeo Rangers and the Turbo Rangers in the same place.
You also had the Mighty Morphin Rangers and the Turbo Rangers and the Zeo Rangers in the same place. And the In Space Rangers.
And we also know that at least Tommy still has access to his Zeo powers in Ninja Steel.
Yeah, the Master Morpher. Which, at
so the Zeo powers aren't gone. They're just literally never talked about again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we have to move on to the next Sentai, I guess. I know that there's, because this gets discussed a lot, and like I've certainly seen my fair share of internet discussion about it, or like videos about it, like people's theories and stuff. If they had just given some kind of throwaway reason in the movie, hey, here's why the Zeo powers aren't working anymore. Even if it had been something like, oh, well, you know, sorry, but like the Zeo crystal like is taking a nap. Like, well, anything. I don't know. Like,
well, according to this right here. So
they give us nothing.
Well, according to this right here, you know, Larigo obviously, you know, turns himself in to protect, to try to save his wife and child. And right. Zordon explains that the magical key that Larigo has ensures safe passage through what's called the Nemesis Triangle, which prevents all ships from reaching Maranthius, which is where Malagor is. There's a vessel known as the Ghost Galleon that can pass through the triangle.
Can we get to the link to the turbo powers?
That's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
But the Ranger's current powers, the Zeo powers, will not suffice for the journey. So Zordon kind of explains, your powers just won't suffice.
Right, and we're not...
Which then leads into the introduction of the turbo...
Right, we're not maligning the fact that they had to change powers, or why. We are maligning the fact as to why the Zeo powers are A, never mentioned again after Turbo, and B, soluble.
It would have been nice if we got those explanations.
And also, I'm sorry, but the logic of, hey, we have to give you an entire new set of powers because these powers, it seems like the turbo powers were in the works before all of this happened with Larigo. So the granted, any explanation they gave us would have been weak because this is Power Rangers, but the justification of you need an entire new set of powers so that you can use these keys to cross through the Nemesis Triangle into this island to stop, you know, the future leader of the United Alliance of Evil, is a little... I mean, I guess it's better than completely nothing, but it's still weird.
So it's also... Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
It's also just dumb that, they're giving up, they went on this journey quest to get the Zeo crystals, this giant, expedition to find the Zeo crystals, and they there's so much
time
more.
Traveled. Yep.
They did so much work for that, and then they're just trading that in, and their big upgrade is cars. It just falls flat. It's okay, cool. We have this giant MacGuffin that is such a huge thing, and they spent so much time on and established so much lore only for them to throw it away because, hey, look, there's cars in the garage now. It's just, it falls flat for me.
So here's what it reminds me of. In later seasons, pretty much starting with Lost Galaxy, Ranger teams will Well, no, it started in Mighty Morphin, really, with the glitter armor, where teams will get an armor upgrade in order to be able to handle certain situations, right? Mm-hmm. Like Lightspeed Rescue get their armor upgrade, the SPD get the SWAT armor, the
Lights of Orion,
the Lights of Orion in Lost Galaxy, right? The metallic armor, the blah blah blah. And given how similar the Turbo Morphers are to the Xenonizers, it would have been really nice for the Turbo powers to be sort of an upgrade of the Zeo powers, so they could switch the Xenonizers, like, because the Xenonizers have the two parts, right? One that plugs into the other. They could have switched the, like, they could have had a command or something that takes the part that plugs into the Xenonizer and turns it into the Turbo key, that they could have then just done the same thing. And it would have been, and again, Sasha's going to hit me. Super Mega Force, they have
the keys.
They have the a whole different suit as their upgrade from a different Sentai season as their upgrade, rather than just like an armor upgrade, right? So they could have done something along those lines. Like, oh, we need to upgrade your Zeo powers to the Turbo powers, right? And then still had the Zeo powers, but just had the Turbo powers be like an upgrade, or for like certain situations.
Or you could say that, like, maybe the Rangers decided to, because it looks like the Rangers in this, in the movie, were a little bit techier. Like, they were doing stuff. They were pressing buttons and stuff. So maybe part of it, since they don't have Billy to rely on, they picked up the slack and they started dabbling a little bit in the Zeo powers to try to upgrade them and to try to do something different. And then this was the result. But again, like, at the end of the day, these are all really fantastic theories and suggestions, but nothing that we got. And so, and like the turbo powers, like the turbo suits are okay. I don't like the like visor at like the black part at the top of their heads. I don't know why that exists. Like in the like in space, it works a little bit differently. So like I didn't hate it as much, but here it looks a little weird.
I know why it's there. It's because it's a sunroof.
You're kidding, right?
Am I?
They don't know. It's Power Rangers.
Their helmets look like cars.
Yeah. Gotta get that fresh air in the helmet somehow.
Yeah. They're Car Rangers. Anyways.
Okay, moving on.
So, obviously, plot holes aside, looking at Yuzio powers going away after falling in water, how did you feel about this being the introductory or the introduction to the turbo powers compared to past seasons where we got multi-part episodes to introduce new villains, powers, swords, outfits, etc.?
I think we already answered this question, Mike.
I will say this. It is called Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. They introduce us to a set of powers that are all about cars.
Mm-hmm.
Cars, which spend 90% of their time on a boat,
that totally has the capabilities to fit vehicles into it, considering how old it is.
Well, but we do know that the Zeo, the Turbo Zords can grow and shrink.
Okay, sure.
Well, no, we
also
do.
They can
We see it in this movie, because when they get into the Turbo Zords, they're normal sized cars. But when they go to form the Megazord, they grow. They literally do.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Which is, I'm not going to lie, is kind of a neat little
kinda
feature.
Kind of dope. It's kind of dope. I have a size-changing car. But there's... And the...
the one time we actually see them use the cars as cars, they're driving through water up to their windshields and not really doing anything that would need them to be cars.
I mean, we get that, like, you know, that like car commercial, like glory shot of like them driving through the desert to the boat, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of a throwaway. And like, I love how they like morph and like, it's like, oh wow, look at our new powers. It's cool. And like, they're driving and like, oh, okay, cool. And there's a shot of us in the suits. Okay.
Also, do the names of the Zords change, right? Because I remember when Justin shows up in Space, the cars are called Stormblaster and Lightning Cruiser.
Over the course of the season, they get two more cars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Justin gets a new blue car that has AI and can act on its own.
Right.
And TJ gets a red car.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
and that's not on top of the other Megazord.
Yeah, and that is... And the ones that are obviously introduced in this film is Red Lightning, Wind Chaser, Dune Star, Mountain Blaster, and possibly the best name of them all, Desert Thunder, and that's because it's Adams.
Yeah.
Fact.
So those are the new vehicles for that. Let's see here. Let me get back to my thing. So Jason is actually able to help Jason's able to help Kim and Bulk and Skull escape, but Kim is then captured again. They are sacrificed to Malagor, which right here, this is technically a two-parter. One, we have to do the Amy Jo appreciation segment because the moment she's possessed by Malagor, that sass is flying, and we all love sassy Kim because it's always fun to watch.
I mean, the acting was really good in that section.
Yeah, like
so can we go back? We go back for a minute? Kind of glossed over the part where Kim and Jason are trying to escape from
the submarine.
Diva Tox's submarine. Because Kim and Jason have been captured and they've been put in the bilge, which as a boy from a naval town, made me quite happy to hear. So there is a whole section where Jason and Kim devise this plan where they are going to pry off a panel to allow water into the bilge so they can then swim out of the bilge. Right? Again, I'm expecting way too much of the writers of this movie, but that is literally the purpose of a bilge, is to take in and put out water. That they would not be sinking if water got into a bilge. It's just what the bilge does. And then there's this whole section where they're trying to pry this thing off the bilge. And the water starts coming in. And it is only as an afterthought that these two ex-Power Rangers go, oh, wait, Bulk and Skull are locked up.
Whoops.
First of all, why is there your brig in your bilge? Second of all, you are Power Rangers. You are better than that.
They got rusty. All of that gymnastics competitions were really took their toll on Kimberly. She's forgotten the ways of the Ranger. But I think
that's no excuse for Jason though.
For sure,
he was literally back in the gold.
Jason's just been the Gold Ranger.
Like, Kim, I'm a little more lenient on there, but Jason, that doesn't pass for him. Sorry.
So one of the other things that I noticed was before they come up with a plan to, you know, open the hatch or whatever, they actually start putting together things that they could use to fight the forces. They're like, because Jason actually tells Kim, like, maybe we should stop making weapons and focus on getting out of here.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice bit. But, you know, they at least they do rescue, you know, Bulk and Skull better than just not doing it. Because at first I thought they were leaving because Bulk and Skull were held in, like, another, like, completely different section that just happened had overlap and they couldn't necessarily get in there. But then they do get in there and they open it up. I don't know. The design of this brig was a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very weird. Anyway, back to the rest of what you were saying, Mike, about Kim escaping and then getting weirdly tied down in what is clearly not. Anyway, what?
So Kim and Jason are sacrificed to Malagor. They come back possessed, which gives us sassy Kim, which
Kim has a great line before she gets possessed, where when the Rangers bust in and she turns to Diva Talks and she's like, these are the Power Rangers and they're your worst nightmare. And I was like, oh, Kim. You haven't been paying attention to Zio, have you?
What's a Zio?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Jason probably clued her in about everything Zio because he was back for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they have been dating.
And then I just like how you know, Tommy's just trying to like talk Kim out of it and stuff like that, and she's just like,
I hated that so much. It was so disingenuous. Like, they play it up as this big reunion between the two of them. Like, even when he takes his helmet off, he's making goo-goo eyes at her. And I'm like, aren't you dating Kat at this point?
And didn't you get dumped in a Dear John letter?
Like, yeah. I can understand if he's gotten dumped and not moved on, and he sees her, and that brings the relationship back, right? That I can understand, because plenty of people have been dumped and still fancied the person that they got dumped by.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's moved on and he's kind of dating Catherine at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, dude.
And what makes it worse is that he's doing this in front of Kat. And it's like, what are you? Oh my God.
Well,
if
Kat doesn't even notice.
Well, if I remember right, didn't he take the helmet off and do that because she had Kat in a, like, she had Kat by the throat or something?
Oh, yeah. Because like she and Kat had been fighting, and there's this yeah. one line that, like, hey, honey, pink is out. She says wearing a pink t-shirt.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, at that point, she was possessed, so, like, the whole pink shirt thing was kind of irrelevant for Kim at that moment, you know?
That all being said, I do, at the very least, kind of like the thought that went into, oh, hey, look, Kim and Jason are evil now, and who are the two people that are going to try and talk them out of being brainwashed into evil, but the two Rangers that are still on the team that were brainwashed into being evil... You know, you got Kat and Tommy. Adam,
you're right. But Adam, I think, also tries to talk to Kim and get her to, like, hey, it's me, it's Adam kind of thing. And it also doesn't work.
Yeah. And not only that, but this also leads to the Tommy Jason fight. And Brian, I'm going to you on this one.
Oh boy.
Because you going, oh boy, explains exactly why I'm going to you. We know about Team Jason, Team Tommy, Team Austin, Team JDF stuff.
Yeah.
You also know a bit more of the background behind this fight scene, too. What are your thoughts on this? And then I'll open up to the other two in a moment. But what are your thoughts on this, knowing the behind-the-scenes issues that were going on between Jason David Frank and Austin St. John? The mindset of the fan base of a Tommy versus Jason stuff.
Okay, so one of the things I put out here was I wonder how many fanboys pointed this scene and use it kind of like a Power Rangers of Bruder film to point out, oh, Austin St. John and JDF actually hate each other, and here's why. You know, back into the left. But like, yeah, it's no secret that like JDF and Austin St. John were not the best of friends. And even when, like, not to bring recent events into it, but like Austin St. John, you know, after JDF passed away, he even straight up said, like, look, we were not drinking buddies. We were not friendly. We were not, you know. That being said, like, I don't know. Like, the fight itself between Tommy and Jason, it's kind of like that in and of itself. It's kind of a weird, like, full circle kind of, like, okay, cool. We kind of maybe get some resolution between these two if there's anything going on, even though that makes no sense because they were friendly at the end of Zio. But
can we stop calling it a fight?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Well, because it wasn't a fight. It was Jason beating on Tommy and Tommy trying to talk his friend down. It was a confrontation between Jason and Tommy. It was not a fight between Jason and Tommy.
But one of the things was in that, and JDF openly said this in interviews, that, and apparently this is part of the reason why there were issues between JDF and Austin, was that for this scene specifically, Jason wanted Austin to actually throw heavier shots at him and stuff like that to make it look more believable of what Jason's trying to do to Tommy.
Strong style.
Like they're trying to make it look a little bit more believable to what we end up getting on the screen. And that was like where some of the issues also kind of arise. And that's at least how JDF put it out in certain in some interviews and stuff like that. So.
Well, whatever it is, there is like a certain like role reversal here. Yes. Of like, oh, look, now Jason's evil kind of a shtick, but it was honestly a lot of the fight sequences that happen in this specific scene are really weird. In terms of like the staging and choreography, like there's a point where I don't know if it was JDF or his double that wears the suit or whatever it was, literally kicks at nothing, and then like the guy flies away as if he'd been kicked.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
I was like, wait, I had to rewind. I'm like, that didn't kick anything, did it? And granted, this wasn't the first time we've seen these kinds of issues with Power Rangers. And that's just, I think, you know, one of the challenges of so many fight sequences with so many players and stuff. But also the editing was really bizarre. Like it'd be in the middle of something and then it would pan back to Diva Talks and then it would go back to finish the sentence. I can't remember exactly where it happened, but I was like, okay, this is kind of weird. But Diva Talks freak, like being so excited at the resurrection of Malagor, going, yes, yes, and all this stuff. And then the way her face changes when you see Malagor's hand, I was like, oh, you were not expecting this.
I also found it interesting, like when Malagor comes out too, and he encounters the Rangers. He does, and this is after the fact that Larigo does the magic onto both Kim and Jason to take him out of the spell. Malagor comes up and he one-shots all five Rangers, but for whatever reason, the one-shot he does to Adam affects Adam more than any of the other Rangers.
Yeah, I caught that. I didn't get that. Like, I
and
saw
this moment where Adam's like, hey, what's that over there? Oh, wait, now I can stand up.
Yeah, that was dumb.
That was weird. And that's coming from the greatest Power Ranger of all time, you know, Adam Park, you know.
But here's the thing. Adam is the greatest Power Ranger part because of the character that he was from the beginning, the what Johnny Young Bosch imbued in the character, how he, you know, acted him and all that jazz. It's not necessarily in the dialogue that Power Ranger writers give him.
Yeah.
But I think when they're on the boat into the Devil's Triangle, because we haven't talked about this, there's a point where these like weird, totally not Ninja Turtles show up on the ship.
The weird Stegosaurus things,
yeah, sure, whatever they are. And everybody fights, and you know, Justin is able with some help to get rid of his blah blah blah, and then Adam's the only one that was like still fighting at the end and needed help to get the like to get the last of those Stegosaurus things out. And Adam's existence in this movie felt a little bit like he wasn't allowed to be cool. And I don't really like Adam being the first to volunteer to like go to the island and check it out. I thought was brilliant, only for Adam to just sort of look around for a hot second and then see the ship get blown up, thinking his friends are dead, and then like, you know, like, oh good, they're fine. Like, I don't know, like Adam's existence in this movie I thought was very weird, and I felt very bad for Adam because he's cooler than this.
It's kind of like season three of Mighty Morphin, where Adam just was there.
Yeah.
So I think part of that, and I'm not making excuses for this, but part of it is A, they needed to keep Tommy someone at the forefront because he was heading for an impending showdown with Jason. And they had to put a lot of focus onto Justin because he was the new character.
Yeah.
You will notice that Tanya is also somewhat non-existent in this
movie. Oh, yeah, she's in this movie.
Because the other three characters had to be the focus because they were headed... They were either headed for important confrontations or they were the new person. And one thing that we have become very familiar with is that Power Rangers writers aren't the strongest. So I don't know they would be able to make five different characters interesting and cool and important.
Yeah. All at the same time.
And as I've said before, this wasn't a movie. This was a feature-length episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was no budget increase. There was no... it's nothing special about it. It was just a feature-length episode. And if anything will tell you that, it's the fight with Malachor.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the entire budget went.
That and there we go.
Going off of Tanya real fast, because I had a thought too about, because they have to go find Larigo, and they're trying to find stuff for these Rangers to do, and Adam gets shorthanded. Tanya gets very shorthanded too.
Yeah.
And here's my thing, like they have to go find Larigo in Africa. Tanya's from Africa.
Yes. Also, someone we've mentioned before is still in Africa.
Yeah.
No, who?
You know.
Who?
You do an A.
No, I don't remember.
No,
sorry.
Okay.
Power Ranger fans apparently have short memories. Or sorry, Power Rangers writers have short memories.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. It just, like, you have an opportunity for Aisha to be like, oh, well, you know, because, and don't get me wrong, Africa is a humongous continent. So the part that they're going to, 99%, certain it's not going to be the same part that she grew up in, but like it's still like, hey, I'm familiar with this terrain, or like, hey, I might be able to like this, that, the other. But like, no, it has to be Tommy and Kat because they're the couple, and it's like.
But I think I wonder if by this point they've also forgotten that Tanya is from Africa, because I don't think it was ever mentioned in Zio after the fact.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't, because she had literally no culture shock whatsoever.
Yeah, so the fact that she was from Africa was clearly not something that the writers like ever wanted to revisit, or by this point they've forgotten about it. That's just the unfortunate reality. I thought it was interesting to see Tanya be sort of at the helm of like the tech side, because she was like pressing buttons and doing stuff and narrowing coordinates down or whatever it was she was doing with Adam. So
we'd seen a bit of that in Zio. The episode where Billy is coming back from Aquitar. There's a whole sequence where he gets blasted off course and they're trying to lock onto him with a tractor beam. And the various rangers are running various stations within the command bunker. So it wasn't the first time we'd seen them do that, but it was the first time we'd seen them sort of doing techno babble sort of thing, like that Billy would have previously done.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Yeah, I don't know. It's, she has to have something to do, I guess. And like, I don't know. I feel like, because what was it? I remember reading something about how there was significant like scenes cut from the movie that featured Adam and Tanya working on stuff like that. And
I hadn't been able to find any information about that.
Yeah. But yeah, that would have been nice, like to at least have that as like deleted footage so we could get more context on that. Mm. But you know, you're gonna focus so little on character development or like giving these characters something to do, but we have to be on the Jolly Roger for like an episode and like, you know.
Okay. Step off that. Okay. Whoa. It may not have made the most sense for them to be taking a ghost ship to an island. I was a fan of the fact that they stopped and allowed us to have some moments of interaction between the cast. Right?
Yeah.
Yes, it was a whole lot of tell, don't show. But we learned more about Justin in the 5-minute talk he had with Kat than we ever know about Tanya.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ever.
Well, didn't Tanya find her parents at one point in Zio or something? Because they were missing? Or...
And like Aisha sent her a letter or something too? Yeah.
Like we got that bit about Tanya. But, you know, like, it's been a hot minute since we all thought about or wanted to think about Zio.
But, like, in the course of that, like, 2-3 minute conversation, we find out he lives in a shelter, stroke, orphanage, stroke this, stroke that, the other. We find out about his parents always being away. His mom's dead. His dad used to have a karate studio, which is why he knows how to fight.
Yep.
His dad doesn't have a karate studio anymore because... he lost the will to fight when Justin's mom died, which sounded like they were building up a really interesting plot point that could have gone somewhere later on, but it doesn't because why would it? We learn more in that like 5 minutes than we ever learn about Tanya. Honestly.
Which is kind of a shame.
So we get the, standard Megazord Battle of Malagor.
And when you say standard, I would like to point this out. Malagor, the big bad that this whole 90 minutes has been leading to. After they have formed the Megazord, the fight begins at 1 hour, 28 minutes, and 30 seconds. Malagor is dead. 90 seconds later.
Yep.
Standard Megazord battle.
Yeah.
The turbo powers were just that good.
It is literally a feature length episode. There isn't even like a peril fight. Like there's a little bit of explosions because Malagor's like got a flamethrower in his hand, but there's no like the Zio Zord getting knocked down, having to pick itself up. There's no like shorting out. There's no them having to learn what the Zio Megazord can do. Just 30 seconds of Malagor and the Zeozord walking towards each other. Another 30 seconds of Malagor like flamethrowing. There's like 10 seconds where they summon the sword and the shield that really reminded me of the Astro Megazord sword and shield for some reason. Because I don't think we ever see the shield again. And then they engage the boosters on their feet, which I don't think we ever see again. I might be wrong. And then Malagor's dead. Just D-E-D, dead.
Dead. I tell you, and he did.
I say you, he did now.
Yeah, it was very anticlimactic to have it that way. Like, at least when you did the first Power Rangers movie and you had Ivan Ooze, you had the conflict of the two Zords that Ivan had dug up and then reanimated. And then in the ultimate battle, he takes over the body of one of the Zords. And, you know, so you have this long, drawn out battle to get to your end point there. And this one was just like, yeah, like you said, it's a feature length episode. And this battle is clear indication of that.
Because they spent all the budget on Diva Tox's costume, I guess. And like, they couldn't, like, that's really kind of disappointing, because like, I really love Zord battles, and I would have loved, because like, you don't have any time restriction. Why do we, it makes no sense. Why can't we get like, I don't know, at least a 5-minute Zord battle, you know?
You could have cut all the stuff with Bulk and Skull
and give that to the Zord battle.
Yeah. And I know that not everyone watches Power Rangers for the Zord battles. I'm looking at you, Sasha. But at least in a movie, something that is promoting itself as a movie, you would expect the Zord battle to be longer than 90 seconds.
No, even I was watching it last night, and I see them like running out and like, oh, they're going to form the Megazord. And like, I turn to like answer a text from my brother or something, and I look back and the fight is over. I was like, wait, what? How did I miss it? So
I will say this though. The sequence where they form the Megazord is amazing.
That was cool.
The way you see the cars all come together was really cool.
And you see, like, Cad Zord sort of, like, split apart in half in order to become the arms and everything. That was cool. Yeah. I like the way the Megazords form. That's always, like, watching, like, a puzzle pieces come together.
Right, but for some reason, there was, like, that specific sequence where they were taking their time with it, and they were talking about, okay, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this, rather than just, like, and I'll form the head. It felt more technical. Yeah.
It's more technical, and I think this is unintentional, but I think it does show that the Rangers are very, like, even Justin, even though he's new, like, the Rangers are way more experienced, and they sort of, I think maybe this is why I got it in my head that maybe the Rangers had some kind of input into the formation of these new powers and Zords, because, I don't know, it feels like they understand the technical side of things in a way that we hadn't seen before. But I could just be making it up in my own headcanons, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the fight.
What fight?
What there was.
Yeah.
It was essentially the John Cena LOL I win.
Five moves down. Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, this brings us to how they end the film. And that is the martial arts competition in Angel Grove, which, by the way, remember how there was that episode when Jason came back and Rocky had his doubts that Jason was coming to replace him and stuff like that? Hey, look, Jason's back, and this time he does replace Rocky, but in the martial arts competition that LOL Angel Grove wins.
Rubbing salt into the wound of your favorite character, aren't you, Mike? Before we do that, I have a question, because I had to rewind it like 3-4 times. So Kim escapes. So maybe you guys can help me clarify this. Kim escapes with Bulk and Skull. They're on the island. Kim gets kidnapped, and Bulk and Scar are like, yeah, we're not going to rescue her because they're still woo-woo. And then they also get kidnapped by the people of this island.
Yeah, the natives.
Right. Okay, so then we see Kim, you know, tied to a thing of bamboo or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do we at any point see Bulk and Skull be in between them getting kidnapped again and Kim showing up with Larigo, the wife, and Bulk and Skull and entering the sword? I see Ben shaking his head. Okay, so I'm not crazy. They just sort of forgot about Bulk and Skull.
Yeah, they're probably still in Africa somewhere right now.
Mm. No, we know they were on the island, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, then they're stuck on that island.
I just said that. They were on the island. They got kidnapped 2 seconds after Kim was. Because they all make it through the devil's, I mean, the whatever it was.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, thank you.
And this isn't like super important, but I gotta ask about Bulk and Skull. Because when they get, when they're on Divatox's sub, like obviously, like they're covered in trash, and you know, like Elgar's like, oh yeah, I wiped their minds and stuff, and their hair's white all of a sudden. And I'm curious if like that was because of the debris that they went through and like they just got debris in their hair, or like did the thing that Elgar did to them like make their hair white? Like
I thought it was Elgar.
Not super important, but like
no, but it was weird. I agree. This movie was something else.
So that was Turbo, a Power Rangers feature-length episode.
Question. I'm sorry. There's one other thing I want to bring up. So the Rangers get sent to the boat, and literally 2 seconds later, Zordon is bringing in Justin. So did Rocky call Zordon and be like, "I have a replacement for you"? And then Zordon doesn't even call the Rangers, be like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm sending you a new Blue Ranger. Justin just kind of shows up and he's like, I'm the new Blue Ranger. And the Rangers are like, eh.
There's a perfectly reasonable explanation for that.
Yeah, Zordon is a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't even think he gave them like a message on the communicator going like, guys, before you get on that boat and, you know, like, untether it and, you know, go sailing, you got another guy coming. Like they could have easily just left him.
Or maybe they know nothing.
So talking about the boat. Boat is the only way to get through the Nemesis bloody blah, blah, blah
triangle.
How do they get out?
Yeah, because the boat's destroyed. They get into the Megazord, which also begs the question, why couldn't they just get on the Zords?
In the first place.
Yeah.
Also,
maybe because they destroyed...
Do you remember how they started taking away the power to teleport?
Yeah.
How did Tommy and Kat get to Africa?
They teleported?
Yeah.
Also, do you guys notice that the teleportation sequences were slightly different from scene to scene?
Yeah.
Like in the first scene where Justin is hiding under the table or under Rocky's bed, there's like white lights and lightning strikes or something like that. And then they teleport out. And I'm like, that's weird. But okay, sure. We're, you know, it's a movie. They're going with a different teleportation sequence. Fine.
Shazam.
And then when Tommy and Kat teleport to Africa, I'm like, wait, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, the CGI in this movie, like when like Larigo is like landing in Africa, even though it looks like he's landing in South America, it was like that CGI is so bad.
So can we actually talk about that scene for a second?
Yeah.
Because I at first thought that he had landed on a different planet or he just like sort of, you know, ran away for a second while the Divatox's forces were looking for him, and then he reappeared somewhere else, because we see those weird looking birds that are obviously, you know, puppets. And then he, you know, falls off the
like, nest. Yeah.
And then we see a kitty. And by kitty, I mean a lion. And I'm like, wait, so is this Earth or is this not Earth? I'm confused. And those birds are looking down like, yeah, you better have left our nest before our mom showed up.
So,
and then he scares the danger kitty away with his magic. And
it was a very cute kitty for the rest.
There's also a moment where he's running away from the Piranatrons, as we will learn they are called next episode. And then he just gets surrounded and teleports away. If you can teleport away, you lead with that.
Yeah.
Just do that first.
Speaking of the Piranatrons, though, their design is not what we will come to know of from Piranatrons. No, they are just dudes.
Dudes with armor, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so and the thing that attacked...
threw me for a loop.
So the thing that attacked the ship were called Putrepods, which were the
Stegosaurus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what those were. And then, yeah, I actually like the look of these Piranatrons for this one, for the movie, because, you know, they are able to talk. They're able to, like, give commands, and, you know, they actually kind of had a little bit more personality to them a little bit.
And sure.
But I don't think your foot soldiers should have that much personality.
I mean, they shouldn't have that much, but, like, when they're trying to, like, go out and, like when they're trying to capture Larigo in the very beginning of the film. Like, the fact that it's made known, instead of just seeing Piranatrons that don't speak and just do, like, the, you know, like, how the putties just kind of, like, do that weird movement and stuff like that. The fact that they have a focus, they have orders, and that they're carrying out the orders, that I liked. That was, like, a very nice, you know,
I know we made fun of it a lot, but is Larigo the best thing in this movie?
Could you define best, please?
Not the worst. Like, we talked about how even through what must have been an awful suit to wear, they both, the Larigo and his family, were able to communicate emotion and able to do very subtle things.
So interesting, Larigo, I think, was actually a puppet. Oh, no, there it is. For whatever reason, on the actual credits, it doesn't have the actor down. It's Sir John Simonton, or Simonton, was the in-suit performer.
Yeah.
For Larigo. But
my point is like, of all the things that we've taken issue with in this review, Larigo seems to be the thing we have the least issue to do. Yeah, it was overly cute. Yeah, it was kind of slapsticky with him falling out of the tree and running away from the lion. But
we don't really get too much in the way of who Larigo is or his people, but we do sort of find, I think the character has at least, he was at least interesting, right? Like, he wanted to protect his family. We understand his motivation for his actions. And it was, I think we mentioned at the beginning of this recording, that the puppetry or the mechanics, whatever, we did see emotion. Yeah. We saw the struggle. We see the fact that, like, they mentioned multiple times that, like, Larigo is basically allergic to the sun. So he needs, like, a red sun to live or whatever. So it creates a dynamic where we sympathize for him and we are interested in seeing him not die.
I will say one of my favorite moments with him, and it tells a lot about, like, who he is, like, you know, Elgar's got, you know, Jason and Kim, and they're trying to do, like, a prisoner's change, if you will, or something like that. Or, you know, and the Rangers are ready to fight, and Larigo's just like, look, man, my wife is, like, in danger, and he just goes. And, like, say what you will about like whether or not that was a smart move or, you know, like a dumb move. It was a move he made because like that's who he is. He needs to protect his wife. And like that was the most important thing to him. And so he like takes all the agency from the Rangers. It's just like, look, I'm going this way. This is what I'm doing. I know what I'm going to have to go through, what they're going to do to me. I don't care. Like my wife's in danger. My kid's in danger. And like, I don't know, like that was kind of touching, if not like questionable, but it was touching.
You know? Yeah. I think Largo might be the best thing in this movie.
And then also this would also mark the last appearance of Ernie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Ernie was in this movie?
Ernie was
in the background.
Yeah, he was part of the martial arts competition stuff.
Sure, was he cameo. Was probably doing the catering.
Yeah. But this was actually his last time appearing because he was actually dealing with health problems due to his weight and was forced to leave because of his declining health.
To go back to Largo for a second. Turning the switch to the Sentai Car Ranger for a moment. I'm aware that there is a suit actor in the Sentai that gives the Rangers their powers. What's the name of that character?
Oh, I have no idea, but he kind of looks like Keeper a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if they were initially setting Largo up to be the translation of that character.
That's possible.
But then they decided to go with the whole, because it's quite clear that they were intent on writing Zordon out at some point, right? But then they decided to go with Demetria instead of having Largo stick around, but they do bring Largo back to help Zordon disappear, apparently.
Okay, so, oh my god, it looks like a really bad version of Yoda, or the baby from the TV show Dinosaur. The name of the character is Hazardian Dapu.
Alright, so
that is the character who gave...
I think he goes by Dapu.
Yeah,
Dapu point, is what
the
he
point,
knows by.
The point I was trying to make is it's quite clear from the fact that things like Lieutenant Stone and Balkan Skull are police officers again in the Turbo movie. And it's quite clear from little things like they don't necessarily have everything lined up with the fact that the actress was able to go and get pregnant and they'll have to replace her for Diva Talks. That they weren't exactly sure where Turbo the series was going at the time they were filming and writing Turbo the movie. Is it possible they were setting Largo up to be Duppa's counterpart? And then they decided, no, what we're actually going to do is, because the character will have to come back at some point, because the actress will come back at some point, we're going to write in a character for the Diva Talks actress to take over when the actual Diva Talks comes back, in which case we got Demetria.
I mean, I think you're right that not all of Turbo was thought out of or planned by the time they made this. I don't know.
I'm not sure much all of Turbo was planned out when they were writing Turbo.
Fair. It begs the question for me regards to Justin's backstory, because in Turbo, he's living with his dad, and I don't think they ever mention the shelter ever again. So,
or the fact that his dad had a martial arts studio.
Yeah, his dad.
He's actually like an accountant or something.
Yeah, it's not
so weird.
What I was going to say is that it's not outside the realm of possibility that a lot of the elements that were planned for the movie were not, or retconned or not incorporated into the actual series for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
Well, I think also part of it is, and I don't know, I've heard random things because like I listen to a lot of podcasts and I've heard some interviews here and there, and I can't quite cite anything, but I do know that Car Ranger going from O-Ranger to Car Ranger for adaptation material Power Ranger was a weird thing to adapt because it's a parody Sentai. Like, they're
that explains the pizza episode.
Yeah.
It's the best episode of the season, and they'll fight you on it.
they parody like all the tropes of Super Sentai up to that point. And so I guess for Power Rangers, like, I can't imagine going through all that material. And we'll talk about that when we get to the episodes proper, because I know that there's going to be plenty of stuff to dissect and go over. But like, I'm just imagining them going over this footage and going, what do we do with this?
Yeah.
Well, that is a question we will tackle when we get to the actual season.
The actual season.
Power Rangers Turbo, and we all suffer.
Oh. Yep. So with that, we will do our socials and all the other fun stuff that we always do. So Sasha, we'll start with you. Where can the people find you on the social medias?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan.
Ben, all right, let me warm up because it is freezing cold at my house for whatever crazy reason.
Get a portable heater.
I'm literally standing over the vent in my bedroom, but still not working. Ben, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing with my good friend Jordan Johnson and my wife, Amy, over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And if you want to hear more from me or Mike, especially on all the wrestling stuff that we talked about earlier in the episode with Rocky doing a Tope Suicida, you can hear a bit more from us on the wrestling, from as we do the Awesome Mania podcast, which is a watch-along podcast. And you can find that at
pxhthockey.com/x75productions/awesomemania.
And if you can't bother to write out all those slashes, just go to the thxthockey.com website and use the drop down.
Or you can also go to our Twitter page of at @vftg_PR, because we have a link tree that takes you to the website right off the bat and to all the other stuff for us. Brian, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @OneDrunkGeek. You can also find me doing stuff with the Castwave folks over at castwavestudios.com. You can also find me on TikTok at BlueRangerBRI, making all kinds of silly videos about Power Rangers and the Sentai and the Kamen Riders and the Ultras and blah, 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 blah.
And you can find me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions. And of course, everything is up on the website at txhthockey.com and Twitch at twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. And we have Linktree now.
Oh, do we? I didn't catch that the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm how just, would people access our Linktree?
Linktree is actually mostly through our bio on Twitter.
It's on Twitter. It's like
a link. Okey-doke. And where would you find that on Twitter?
At @VFT_PR.
@VFTG_PR.
There's a G in there.
There's a G in there, Mike.
Yes. And the official Linktree link is linktr.ee/VFTG.
You could just put it in the description of the show notes instead of just like, on the podcast. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Anywhere and everywhere all at once.
Yes, exactly. So with that, Ben, take us out.
How to sum up this episode? We have a 12-year-old. Rocky is no longer having problems with doors. And Diva Tox has begun the new trend of having incredibly attractive female villains. That being said, we will leave you as we always do by saying, guys, gals, non-binary pals, and all those outside of that spectrum. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, my friends.
And until our next Morphonomical episode, be sure to grab your Zionizers and wait, no, that's not going to work. Your Turbo... Morpher? What are they called? Turbo Morphers and your Turbo Keys.
and may the power protect you.
And check us out as we finally delve into that fantastic pizza episode.
It's the best episode!